Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Alaska's abundant wildlife adds a lot to the quality of life in the 49th state. Bears, wolves, moose, lynx, and coyotes are an important part of the ecosystem, a source of food for many residents, and provide opportunities for viewing wildlife up close, even in the urban areas of Alaska. How can you observe these large creatures in a safe manner that doesn't endanger you or the animals you're watching? Wildlife experts and citizens with trail cameras join us today for Talk of Alaska.
Alaska Public Media is all about community. Wear your community on your sleeve with the purchase of branded clothes and collectibles from our online store. Visit alaskapublic.org/shop.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. It can be a big thrill to be on a backwoods trail and see an enormous moose or a foraging bear, as long as you're watching them from a safe distance. But what does that mean? Is that safe space 20 feet or 200? Your safety could depend on whether you startled the animal, especially if the animal is protecting young or for bears guarding a recent kill. Lots of Alaskans have amazing stories of close encounters with moose and bears. Some of them were only scary. Some resulted in severe injuries. Recent examples are from April, when two Army soldiers from the 11th Airborne Division were attacked by a brown bear during training exercises on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson J-Bear land near Anchorage. Both soldiers reportedly used bear spray. Both had severe injuries. And earlier this month, a woman was with her two dogs foraging for mushrooms near Skelak Lake on the Kenai Peninsula when one of the dogs was attacked by a brown bear. The woman shot the bear twice and fired a third time, but took off with her dogs to get the injured one to medical care. A biker was also injured in a bear attack on the Dome Trail in Anchorage this month. Our guests today have ideas and tips for safely being in Alaska's wild places, but as those stories reveal, things can still happen quickly, and being prepared is paramount for survival. Sean Farley is in the studio with us today. Sean is a wildlife physiologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game based in Anchorage. Hannah Mananen is on the line from Juneau. Hannah is a wildlife biologist also for the state's Fish and Game Department and is based in the Juneau-Douglas area. Joe Cantill is in the studio with us. Joe is a retired healthcare educator and a local Anchorage resident and wildlife enthusiast. Joe maintains trail cameras in the Anchorage area. We'll hear more about that in a while. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks.
All right. And we hope to have Donna Gail Shaw join us later in today's program. Donna is also a retired educator, having worked as a science educator and associate dean in the College of Education at UAA. Donna was inspired by Joe to put up her own trail cameras. So, Sean, I want to start with you. You have a really interesting title, wildlife physiologist. Talk about what that means and what your work involves.
Well, I was originally hired as a wildlife biologist, and that is really what I am and the work that I work on. My background is in zoophysiology, and so a lot of my research projects have tended more toward the lines of what sort of resources animals need, particularly bears, because I was hired to fill a bear position in order to survive, especially for bears to hibernate. But I also do an awful lot of just standard wildlife biology, trying to figure out population productivity, how many cubs are produced and how long they survive for like the Kenai population of brown bears. I've been very, very fortunate to have many different graduate students, and we've worked on everything from porcupines to moose. I've done work on sea lions. And so I'm a wildlife biologist, but I'm also much more interested than maybe the average in terms of how animals work and what sort of makes them tick inside in terms of the physiology.
Really fascinating research work. The story of the woman near Skelak Lake, I know that's not your region, but do you know what happened there, if that bear was found after it had been shot at least twice?
Well, actually, I do work on the Kenai. That's where I've got several, probably 20 to 30 collared brown bears. I've done quite a bit of work down there. I'd like to make one correction. It was a black bear, not a brown bear.
Oh, sorry.
That attacked her. And so, yeah, my understanding, I haven't talked to the lady, the area biologist down there. Chris would know much more, but it sounds like there was a loose dog that interacted with a bear that might have had cubs, and the bear just defended its young.
Yeah. But was the bear found?
No, we don't normally go after bears that do. What we try and do is, if it's, this is Alaska, if you stumble across a bear that has cubs and you get between its, the mom and the cubs, she's going to defend it. And she's just doing, being a bear. If you stumble across a bear that's sleeping and startle it, and it's going to defend itself. Really, depending on most circumstances, unless the bear has actually been actively trying to be a predator for a person, then we don't usually go after them. Or if we have a bear that is very aggressive and has been charging people a bunch, and we have a pretty good idea it's in one area, then we might go ahead and remove it. So even though if it hasn't touched anybody, but if it's been a lot of aggressive encounters, that's happened on popular trails sometimes where you're in the bear's home range and we may have a bear that's just repeatedly driving people off and it's just waiting for an encounter to go wrong. And that's a case that we would go for the bear. But generally, we don't usually just go look for a bear just because it attacked a dog or someone.
Except for she'd shot it, she said, at least twice.
Yes, she did. And again, I didn't get the complete story on everything. But when we carry guns in the field and we have to go to the range and qualify, most people that are carrying guns, you know, they're lucky to hit the broadside of a barn. And no disrespect to the lady that involved there. She may very well hit it, but we've also had cases where they haven't. Mm-hmm. Blood was found, and there was a blood trail, so she did definitely hit the bear. But it was a handgun, and bears can take a lot of damage. And so I believe the state troopers did go look and follow the blood trail for a bit, but then lost it.
Wow.
And beyond that, we didn't expend any resources, and neither did they, to find the animal.
Several years ago, you put collar cameras on some Anchorage black and brown bears, I believe. Is that correct?
Both black mainly brown bears, or black bears, sorry.
Okay. Those video clips were both kind of fun, but also scary to watch, realizing how close they can be without us knowing it. Describe what the project aimed to do with those video recorders and what you learned.
Well, we really wanted to know where the bears were traveling without just using GPS collars on the bears. We also wanted to know what sort of foods that they were eating, how often garbage or anthropogenic foods from humans, how important they were and how prevalent they were in the diet of the bears versus the natural foods they could find. You know, we have a lot of really good streams. We've got fish. We've got nesting birds. We have moose calves. So there's a fair amount, and berries in the fall, there's a fair amount of natural foods for the bears as well. And so we really wanted to be able to split that apart and see how important is basically garbage to bears for their diet in Anchorage, and how attractive may that be to the bears versus the natural foods.
Mm-hmm. Is that footage still online? Will you do things like that again, do you think?
Oh, it'd be fun to do some more. It would be very interesting because once you do a research project and look at the results, you realize, well, I could have done it in a better way, some other way, because that's part of research is learning. It should still be online in part. I'd have to double check because our education folks, I think it was mainly Elizabeth Manning, put together a really wonderful group of how to access that and look at what the bears were doing in, say, your particular neighborhood. And I don't know. I think it's still up, but I couldn't tell you what the URL is off the top of my head.
And are there other fish and game folks in the state doing similar projects with these types of collar cameras?
We've had several. There was a really good study out of Unit 13 on Glen Allen where they put it on brown bears to look at habitat, or excuse me, a diet for the brown bears. And I put them on black bears on Port Dick area outside of Kenai across the hill, if you will, from Homer. So there have been a few out that, and then I think there was one, maybe another one in Southeast that I'm not, I don't recall off the top of my head. You can learn a lot by seeing what the bears are seeing. And as computers get more efficient and as memory becomes cheaper, you can catalog and get more video so you can learn more. Initially, the very first one I did was actually a still camera, and that was in town. And from there, it's progressed to video.
Yeah.
The big limitation is really battery life.
Oh, I imagine so. That makes sense. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about living with wildlife, the abundant wildlife that we have in this in our state. It's glorious and fantastic, but it can also be dangerous, so you have to be careful. In the studio with me today is Sean Farley. Sean is a wildlife physiologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Joe Cantill is also in the studio with us. Joe is an Anchorage resident and trail cam enthusiast. And Hannah Mannanen is on the line from the Juneau-Douglas area. Hannah is a wildlife biologist with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And we are being joined by Donna Gale Shaw. Donna Gale is an Anchorage, also an Anchorage resident and trail cam enthusiast. Before I get to Joe and Donna Gale, Hannah, I want to get you in here. You're in the Juneau-Douglas area and also manage the Haynes and Skagway region. Talk about the differences and what kind of wildlife you're educating the public about in these areas and what you want them to do in places like the Chilkoot River area where there's a lot of brown bears.
Yeah, so that is correct. I primarily manage Haynes and Skagway, but I also assist with Juneau, Douglas, and then Yakutat and Gustavus. So it's interesting because in Southeast we have a variety of different species, and unlike Anchorage, we are not managing specifically for brown bears in some areas. Like in Juneau Douglas specifically, we're working mainly with black bears. And then once you get to Haynes, then you're starting to work on brown bears in the Chilkoot. And so I think that is really just knowing how to respectfully be around brown bears. So the Chilkoot is a pretty small, congested area located in Haynes, for those who may not know. It is a popular spot for photography, fishing, guided tours, tourists, bear viewing, things like that. So I think it's really important to keep a safe distance from the bears. They are actively fishing the Chilkoot River during salmon runs. There is a weir located in that river as well that can lead to some extra congestion. So just keeping a safe distance from them, also realizing when female bears have cubs, to keep that in your mind and to not get between an adult female and her cubs. And then also what to do with your fish, right? So if you're fishing, make sure that you're throwing those gut piles into fast moving water. If a bear approaches you, cut that line. You don't want that bear to see you as a source of food and then getting a food reward from humans. And then some other things, like if you're camping in the Chilkoot, just being aware that you're in brown bear territory and making sure that you're not cooking near your tent, you're not storing your foods or any smelly items near your tent is really important. And for the Chilkoot and several other camping areas, they have designated bear boxes. So just making sure that you're using those bear boxes as well.
You know, when you mentioned throwing fish guts into fast-moving water, I was a little surprised by that because I imagine if the water is moving quite well, that would be fine. But I've walked along the creeks here in Anchorage and seen where people have thrown their fish waste after harvesting. And it makes me angry because I'm afraid I'm going to be walking along that trail and a bear is going to be invited to that smelly gut pile there. So I can see why you wouldn't want them to have a pile laying close by, because that's going to attract bears also. But wow. Should they always be throwing them in water, or is there, what else should they do?
Yeah, and I think the important part for that is noting fast-moving water, right? Because it's not fishing, camping, all of these things. The actions that the person doing at that moment can also affect the people using the area behind them, right? So you're talking about people leaving fish guts in an area that they're not getting taken away, right? And that's causing a hazard for other people to use that area later. And so I think really it can be a situational thing. If it's not fast moving water, then I think you need to do something else in that scenario. So I think the key word is fast moving water for that situation.
Plenty of water to flush them away from the area.
Yeah.
Hopefully. All right. Joe, you and I have known each other for more than 20 years, and I did not know until yesterday that you were a trail cam enthusiast. Tell us where you are viewing wildlife in Anchorage and how you got started.
I got started when I came across some Jaber and I think state wildlife biologists out on Jaber. They had set up some wild or live traps. I just came across them three or four times, and they were doing a predator inventory, I believe, and came across the trap and noticed their the camera set up. So I thought, wow, I didn't know they had those kind of cameras. So I went and got myself a cheap Tasco. And first thing I caught was I was told later, it was a female wolverine with a collar. And I took the video in and showed it to the gentleman at Fishing Game. And he said, oh, that's our little female that we're tracking. So I've set my cameras up around Jaber back in the day anyway, and pretty much now just focus on Far North Bicentennial Park area, that general area right there.
When you said that the first time when you saw that critter on your cameras, the wolverine, you went to the spot on the trail. Talk about what that was like when you went there. Of course, the wolverine wasn't there then, but
yeah,
what was that experience like?
I stood there the next time, you know, I took the camera home, looked at the video. Then I went back and set it up again. And it was just, I don't know, I was pretty interested and moved, I guess, by the fact that this is where it was. You know, I have a video of it, and it was walking that way. And I kind of looked down that trail, where did it go, where did it come from? And, you know, that's the fascination for me to begin with.
Yeah, those wild beasts. And sticking with you for a minute, Joe, you're a hunter, but you said the perception of bears as snarling predators eager to pounce on people isn't accurate. Talk about what you want people to think about when they're considering bears. Yes, they can be extremely dangerous, of course, but they're not laying in wait for us around every corner.
Growing up around the dinner table, my dad grew up as a subsistence hunter in Metlakatla and Ketchikan area. I learned from his stories about animal activity, especially wolves and bears, what you can expect from them, what they might do, you know, and I assume he had learned from other hunters. He had a couple rules, you know, check your back trail, try not to stumble around and fall, stuff like that. So they've been, you know, they're a powerful spirit animal, both of those. I respect that. So it's just an awareness that where I go, they go. And as long as I make them aware that I'm there, make a lot of noise, I favor having a dog or two with me that's trained, that I'm pretty really comfortable with, that how it's going to act. So that's not always advised. You know, people usually caution that a dog will bring a bear back to you. You know, they'll stir up a bear and they'll run toward, the dog will come back to you, but the bear will be right behind it.
So. That happens with moose sometimes also.
Yeah. Moose is a totally other subject for me. I've had some pretty bad run-ins with moose, but I haven't had any with bad run-ins with bears. But, you know, the one thing is that the trails that I walk on, Far North Bicentennial and Jaber, they're real close to my house, and that's where I want to go. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was working, it was part of my schedule, so it was the trailhead was a mile away, and I couldn't. I just I didn't want to find any place else. I like getting into the woods, off the trail sometimes.
I do too.
Bushwhacking and stuff. Yeah. So.
And Sean, your thoughts about this perception of bears as, you know, just these predators are laying in wait for us all the time, and you know, the images that we see in movies and things like that.
Well, Cocaine Bear was not real, if you remember that particular movie. No, Joe's correct. The bears, they'd rather not deal with us at all. And so when we do have problems with bears, it's because we've done something, intruded in their space, or gotten between moms and cubs, or startled them somehow. From the work that we've done, especially with collars, GPS collars that give us very exact locations of the bears, I know for a fact that people have walked down many, many trails in Anchorage, and the bears have been 20 or 30 feet off to the side. We're a visual species, as I talked about earlier, and the bears see us, smell us, and hear us much more than we do. And so people have this predilection. If they don't see a bear or a wolverine, it doesn't exist. Mm. But the fact is, there are quite a few instances where the bears are just off to the side of the trail and waiting for you to go by. If I could throw this out real quick, I've got different cameras up as well from Fish and Game, and we closed off Rover's Run last year because we've had issues there. And no sooner was it closed off than I got people, and I'm pretty sure it was a track team from a local school, running through, bypassing the closed off area.
Oh, no.
As well as multitude of pretty significantly large brown bear males and females. So. But people don't see them, so they don't exist, but they're there. Mm-hmm. So, no, the bears are not out looking for blood, if you will. It happens. Bears can be predatory on people. There's no question about it. But it's extremely rare, and it's pretty rare. But it does happen.
And the main thing is just make sure that you're making plenty of noise. I remember going fishing one time to one of my favorite spots, kind of a brushy area, and as I was getting my gear out, there was a man with a small son with him, and he was saying, now, when we go down the trail, we have to be very quiet so we don't disturb the bears. And I thought, oh, I hope your child lives to adulthood with this bad advice. So I immediately grabbed my gear and started yelling, hey, bear, coming through, bear, as I walked past them, hoping to keep us all safe. But it just comes down to primarily that, doesn't it, that you should just make sure that you're making enough noise that you're not going to startle a bear.
Well, given the number of people that are hiking trails in Alaska, and particularly around Haines and Juneau, a lot of activity around Anchorage, we don't have that many interactions with bears. And that's because the bears know they're coming. I do take exception, Joe, to the dog issue. Part of the job that I work with involves dealing with all the maulings, both fatal and non-fatal. And we've got several instances, more than a handful, where a dog that's run loose and is 20, 30, 40 yards ahead of the person hits a bear and brings it back. Mm. And definitely a loose dog that's not under control, either by a leash or voice that goes away from you, is a danger, very much a danger.
Yeah, that does make sense. Joe, you said your dogs are obedient?
My experience with my dogs, when we see a bear, we see a moose, that I associate bear and moose. As, I don't talk to my dogs that much so that they pay attention to what I do say and my, you know, my hand signals. But I still would prefer to go with dogs. I've gone without dogs a lot, but... you know, there's the other part about getting my dogs exercise, and they get me out of the house anyway. So,
well, I'm not saying don't take your dogs. I'm saying if you take your dogs, do it in a responsible manner where they're under either voice control or a leash, so they don't go so far off the trail where they can bring a bear back to you. It does happen.
Yeah.
It does. And like I said, this has happened both in non-fatal and fatal incidents that I've had to deal with.
Yeah, I watch behind my dogs. When she comes running back to me, I'm looking behind her.
Yeah, I would be too.
It hasn't happened yet.
Let's go to the phones for just a moment before we have to take a break. Nolan is in Wasilla. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yes. Yes. I've read a lot and heard a lot about the near-fatal attacks on J-Bar and the bear spray was deployed. But unfortunately, none of those indicated whether it was deployed before the attacks or during the attacks, which is a very significant issue. Do you know which?
I don't. Sean, do you have any knowledge of that?
Yeah, it's a good question because the bear spray that the soldiers had was inadequate, and that was not through any fault of their own. But our area biologist, Corey Stantorf, and his assistant have done a great job examining that particular brand of bear spray that's sold in the BX. And he's got a really good video in-house that we used that showed him spraying regular DAP or UAT, the regular bear spray you could get, say, at REI or Cabela's, compared to the one that the soldiers were using. Both of the soldiers did deploy and did spray the bear and themselves, and it had no effect, but the stream didn't come out appropriately. It looked more like a squirt gun of a cloud, if you will. And so, yeah, no, that was a very good question. I'm glad you brought that up. And the type of bear spray, the brand you use, I mean, I'm not going to recommend one over the other. I'll get in trouble for this. Don't buy the one that's at BX.
Well, and also, it's a good idea for people to practice. Like, get more than one canister of bear spray so that you know how to use it, how it's going to come out, how far it's going to shoot. You should be aware of all those things, correct?
It's good to know how to do it, and I don't want to commit our education people to something that they're not doing, but I'm pretty sure that they do have test vials or canisters, and they do go through periods where they'll show people how to use it. But I think REI used to do something similar. Cabela's might. But no, it's a good idea to know what does it do. And also, they don't last forever. They have a due date on them.
Yeah.
And they will expire. So it's worth the extra $50 every couple of years.
All right. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get Donna Gail Shaw in here, as well as we continue our discussion about how to stay safe with Alaska's wildlife.
Alaska Public Media is all about community. Wear your community on your sleeve with the purchase of branded clothes and collectibles from our online store. Visit alaskapublic.org/shop.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing how to live safely with the abundant wildlife that we have in our state. It's glorious to be able to be out there on the trails and see moose and bears and wolves and other things, but you want to be able to do that from a safe distance. In the studio with me today is Sean Farley. Sean is a wildlife physiologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. On the line from Juneau is Hannah Mananen, who is a wildlife biologist with the Fish and Game Department. And in the studio with me is also Joe Cantill. Joe is an Anchorage resident and a trail cam enthusiast, and Donna Gail Shaw, who is also an Anchorage resident and trail cam enthusiast. Donna Gail, thank you so much for being here. I know you had to rush out of an appointment to get to us, so I really appreciate you getting here. You got interested in trail cameras after meeting Joe. Tell us how you first got started monitoring the footage and what you've captured through the years.
Okay. Joe is my mentor when it comes to trail cameras. I met Joe on the trail after I retired from the University of Alaska Anchorage. I was a science educator. And after I retired, I needed things to do. So one of the things I did was hike a lot. And I picked the area near my home. And that happened to be the area where Joe hikes. Mm-hmm. And I met Joe on the trail one day, and then another day, and then another day. And so we became friends, trail friends. And then Joe mentioned that he had game cameras. Well, I'd never seen a game camera. I was very curious. So Joe trusted me enough to take me to one of his sites and then showed me what he found on his camera. I think probably at that time it was bears, and so that was real exciting to see the bears and to watch Joe and his appreciation for nature and his love for nature. He didn't want to kill the bears, but he enjoyed filming the bears. And so Joe would get his SD card out of the camera and he'd take it home and he'd look at it, but he wouldn't always share with me what he saw. And I had become just very quickly interested in it, and I wanted to see what he saw every time he went to his cameras. Well, I became sort of, I think, probably like a nagging wife would become, and I started to nag Joe, and I wanted to see Joe's footage. And Joe one day just very politely looked at me when we were out on the trails, and I was probably complaining that he hadn't shown me the most recent footage. And he said, you know, you can get your own camera.
And that was the start of it.
And now, 11 cameras later, yeah. I operate 11 cameras in Far North Bicentennial Park. Joe taught me how to find good locations to place the cameras, taught me how to use the cameras, taught me how to go in and out of the area safely. And so for about 9 years now, I've operated cameras in what I call the Muldoon Swamp.
Mm-hmm. Do you both have permits, or Sean and Hannah, maybe you need to weigh in here. Can citizens just put cameras wherever they want out in the woods, or is there some sort of protocol that are they going to get in trouble today?
Fish and Game doesn't, you don't need a permit for Fish and Game.
Okay, so you can just go out and put cameras on the trails. Interesting.
So far.
That might change after this program. Joe and I did check with Fish and Game when we were first starting our hobby, or at least when I was starting my hobby, because I was wanted to make sure whatever I did was legal, and it was determined that it was legal. Trail protocol probably tells you not to put a camera directly on a very active human trail. So I do not do that. I put my cameras on game trails or on the creek. I try to avoid filming humans. I don't want to film humans.
Sure.
My cameras are there to film the wildlife.
We can see those in the city.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Donna is in Eagle River. Hello.
Hello. I'm going to talk about Joe because he knows me. And he knows about the trail cameras because I thought this was such a...
Hello? You're breaking up a bit, Donna.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. The story is that there was a dead moose on my property. I live in Eagle River, and there's a lot of families around my home, too. And so we called Fish and Game. It was over Memorial Day weekend, not this year, but the year before. And they said they couldn't get there till Tuesday because it was a holiday weekend, but Joe says, I'm going to put some cameras up because there's a moose there that could cause, you know, issues. And so the next day came by and we looked at the videos, and it was shocking to me how many bears were on my property in a neighborhood with kids and all that. In the middle of the night, a little bit past midnight, a big brown bear came and grabbed that full-size moose and dragged it down the hill. So by the time, you know, Fish and Game got there, the moose was long gone. But he was so strong. It was amazing to see that animal pull that. The bear pulled that full-size moose down the hill, and then a few hours after that, a black bear come looking for it, and you can almost see the thoughts in the bear going, who took my moose? to think that there's so many bears in your neighborhood all the time, you're not even aware of it, but they usually come out at nighttime when nobody's around.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's an eye-opener to realize how close they are. As Sean said, they're often just 20 feet or so off the trail, and we go by them. I remember one of the camera footage that you had was of somebody going by on a bicycle on a trail, and the camera just kind of panned with the bicyclist, who didn't see, of course, that the bear was right there, but the bear watched the bicyclist go by, and that was captured on video. Joe?
The first time I met Sean was a presentation he did at the Campbell Air Science Center, and they were in a helicopter following a bear with GPS, and it was at a local high school, and there was a cross-country meet or something, and Sean said that there was a brown bear 40, 50 feet off of right at the start where the trail goes into the woods as this whole group came by. Of course, nobody knew, but that always stuck in my head, you know.
Well, it just reinforces that if you don't get in the bear's space, if you don't bother them, they're usually not going to bother us.
Mm-hmm. Especially when there's a big group like that.
Right.
That's even more helpful to have a number of people. Sean, I wanted to talk a bit about dens. And Hannah, I want to get back to you about that as well. You monitor an unusual den that seems kind of like a bear Airbnb with different bear families and year-round use. So interesting. Tell us about that.
Well, this den was discovered in one of our earlier projects with a collared bear one of our former employees, Tony Carnahan, tracked it down when the collar disappeared, and he found it. And I can't be too specific, but it's only about 20 yards off the Seward Highway. And it was multi-generational use with black bears. And I've got cameras on it now, and we get bears coming in and out pretty much all summer long. It really changed how I think about how some dens are used. But for sure, we had one year a female with cubs, Koi, Cub of the Year, come out of the den, and then right after that, another adult bear. And then one side of the den is used by a porcupine as well.
Multi-unit housing there.
So, yeah, the bears come and visit the den, and we call it the Bear B&B, frankly. And so it's been pretty fascinating. I wish I could have gotten some hair samples or something, because I'd be willing to bet that the bears are all related.
Okay.
It could have been a daughter, or probably a daughter from a previous litter, or even a sibling of sorts. So males usually disperse, so my guess is it was another female.
And so this is unusual. You don't normally see that?
Well, I call it unusual because I haven't seen it, but at the same time, we haven't really done a lot of den monitoring after the bears leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so it very well could be a bias on our part relative to certain types of dens. I mean, we know that a lot of the bears that den in trees don't usually go back during the summer, as far as we know. But these ground dens may be a little different.
Hannah, how about you? Are you monitoring dens near Juneau and Douglas and also in the Haines and Skagway area?
Yeah, so our brown bear biologists... They did about a 6-year study in Haines to kind of look at what those population estimates of brown bears in the area was. And so they were actively monitoring dens during that study. That study has concluded now. We've switched study areas, but that is something that our brown bear biologists also look at.
Have you seen any sort of bear B&B type activity or... Not.
I have personally not, but that would be a question for some of our brown bear biologists, Anthony Krupe and Stephanie Sell.
Really interesting. We have by email from Dean. He says, I'm a former high school teacher and trail camera enthusiast also. I have over 100 trail cameras operating right now. I started with 2 cameras about 10 years ago. The addiction exploded since then. I've caught just about all of the furry animals that you could think of in interior Alaska. I check them every week or two, and I'm always happy with what I see when no one is around. In the summer, I walk many of the trails that my cameras are on and have never had a negative bear or other predator encounter. I share my pictures with family, friends, and coworkers. So that's a fun story from Dean. And Donna, Gail, you... some of the footage that you gathered on one of your cameras really made the Facebook page that you post things to kind of explode with people of that were interested. Tell us about what happened there.
Yes, a few years ago, it's 2 or 3 years ago, I don't remember exactly now, in September, I caught on 2 of my cameras a pack of 5 wolves taking down a moose yearling calf in Campbell Creek. Just right in front of the cameras. I had cameras that were farther downstream that actually caught the wolves as well on their way toward the kill site, and they were very skinny wolves at that point. And then they killed the moose right in front of my camera, and one lady, after I posted the photos, wanted to know if the wolves were pregnant, because their stomachs had expanded so much after eating the moose. But yes, that made our site pretty popular.
Yeah, probably kind of gruesome footage too, I imagine.
It was very gruesome. I did not share the entire footage with the Facebook page that Joe created, but I shared right before the wolves took down the moose calf, kind of the pursuit part of it. I did watch all of it. And there was probably 4 hours of it. It took them about 4 hours to finish eating it.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Jennifer is in Fairbanks. Hello.
Hello.
Did you have a question?
I actually have a resource to share. I have recently retired from Arctic National Wildlife Refuge after about 25 years working as a federal public lands ranger. And I had a focus on helping public folks coexist with both polar bears and grizzly bears and black bears. So our agency, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that manages national wildlife refuges, the Alaska region created an exceptional bear spray training and information public resource. So if listeners are interested in learning about proper use of bear spray, they can navigate to YouTube, and then from the YouTube website, search the words USFWS Alaska Region Bear Spray Training and Information, and that video will pop up. It's a great resource that very effectively takes a person step-by-step through proper use of bear spray.
All right. Thank you for that tip. Appreciate the call, Jennifer. Good idea for folks to, you know, just as if you're going to carry a gun, you should go to a range and practice shooting and be aware of the fact that handguns are not very accurate after not very many feet because of such a short barrel. But if you are going to carry one, you should make sure you know what you're doing and how to use it and not just carry it. Thanks for the call, Jennifer. Sean and Hannah, I think a lot of folks, myself included, think that bears come out of dens way up in the mountains, and some of them might meander down to the city following salmon streams or looking for moose calves. But some dens are very close to urban areas. You were talking about the bear B&B that you've got cameras on now. Talk about your observations in your districts where bears like to den to help people better understand is there a certain terrain that you could say be wise to stay away from these kinds of areas in the spring when bears are waking up and being active? Or is it really hard to know?
I like to say bears den wherever the heck they want to. I've had bear dens, brown bear dens I could see from my office on Raspberry. And there's a subtle bias for all of our biologists when we're flying along in the springtime and bears are coming out of the den. You can only see the ones most easily that are in the snow above tree line. It's much more difficult to see the ones that are in the trees. But with the different collared bears that I've followed, I had a 1,200-pound male that denned at Point Possession on the Kenai, so 50 feet above sea level. So it is true that females often den a little higher because they want to avoid the males. I've had females den on Sky Islands in the glacier field on Kenai to avoid males. But by and large, they'll den wherever the heck they want to.
Hannah, your thoughts?
Yeah, a bit the same as Sean. I will say that we haven't really done extensive collar studies specifically with our Juneau Douglas black bears, but agreed with Sean that they kind of can den wherever they want, and then really, we're starting to see them in town after they've come out of the den and before they have a lot of those natural food resources available.
All right. We are going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about how to observe the abundant wildlife in Alaska in a safe manner as Talk of Alaska continues. For all of you, do you think there are more bears and moose in urban areas, or is it just that because we have people like Donna Gale and Joe with cameras and other folks with cameras, and almost everyone has a camera in their hand or pocket with their phone, so there's a lot more photos, opportunistic photos, and posting online? Is it more perception, or are there more wild animals in urban areas? Sean, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, as I just mentioned to these guys, you know, everybody's got a Ring camera. And so you see the bay animals that come through your yard that you didn't see before because most people aren't up at 2:30 in the morning looking in the backyard. So I would be willing to go out on a limb and say I don't think that we've had a explosion of moose or bears, but we've definitely had an explosion in the number of cameras that are available, whether it be game cameras or ring cameras or cell phones. And so, and more people probably in the trails than we ever have had. So I think that's a big part of it.
Sure. Yeah. Hannah, what's your, what are your thoughts about that in your region?
Yeah, that's my thought as well in the Juneau-Douglas area, is that I wouldn't say we've all of a sudden have more black bears on in these urban areas or on the landscape in general. I think it's just that we have a lot more people actively taking photos, sharing those photos on Facebook, calling those photos into Fish and Game. And so it may seem like it, but I think we just have more resources to capture those bears that we are seeing.
How about for our trail camera enthusiasts, Donna Gale and Joe, through in the years that you've been doing this, do you see kind of an increase, or does it just sort of stay about the same throughout the years?
I see some fluctuation, but not much. Okay. Last year, very consistently recorded 3 sows with cubs in the area. I don't always get that many sows with cubs, but I typically get 1 or 2 sows with cubs in the area throughout the summer. I film up to about 8, it appears, if I'm accurate, and I may not be accurate, just from visualizing on my cameras and the different cameras that I have, up to about 8 brown bears on Campbell Creek in the summer. Not always that many, but more than 4.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot to me. Joe, your thoughts?
As soon as the salmon start arriving in Campbell Creek, we'll start noticing, but I know Donna Gale's gotten a couple of brown bears this year on the creek, but the salmon aren't there yet. We've noticed a popular trail and a bridge, and we haven't seen salmon up at that bridge in like 4 years now. So the run's depleting. That definitely, and you got bears now at Bird Creek, or I guess they've always been there, but I'm sure those might be some of the same bears we see here. There's a good silver salmon run there.
Well, and I know that several years ago, there was an older female bear that was hit by a car on Minnesota, I think, that had come up from the creek and, you know, apparently
Gamble.
Had apparently just was following along the creek, I suppose, looking for fish, and happened to come up on the highway, and a gentleman was driving along at like 4:30 in the morning and didn't see it, was suddenly in front of him, felt real bad, hit the bear, but right in the middle of the city.
Actually, we've had several. We've had at least 2 adult male brown bears killed by cars. One is at the old site of Cal Worthington Ford on Chester.
Yes.
And the other one was in front of Hanshu Middle School. And they're adult bears. They're not lost. They're in their home range.
Sure.
They're out following the riparian zones, the areas. Several years ago when I did that coloring study, which was quite a while ago, we collected a lot of DNA from hair and fecal samples with the idea of what's the minimum idea of bears visiting Bicentennial Park and Jay Bear. And in the area between Jay Bear and pretty much Indian Creek, I and myself and the area biologist at the time thought maybe we had 5 or so brown bears using the area, but I picked up 36 individual brown bears.
Wow. That's eye-opening. All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment and talk to Danny and Haynes. Hello, Danny.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Oh, great. I wanted a couple comments. I wanted to apologize if I caught the program late, if I'm duplicating things. But I guess one of the questions for Hannah in Haynes, we've had 2 springtime steers mauled by bears. And is it her understanding that the bears are coming out of dens earlier because of climate change?
I'm sorry, 2 springtime. I didn't catch that first part.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we've had people attacked by bears that were springtime skiers in Haynes.
Skiing.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, I'm a friend with Anthony Krupes, and he mentioned that he thought that bears may be coming out of dens a little earlier and before things have greened up. maybe food stress? Is that your knowledge?
Yeah. So my understanding from that story is that there was some skiers skiing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on some of this information, some skiers skiing, and they had skied over or pretty close to the den in which the female then, I believe it was a female, came out and did go after one of the skiers. I don't know that that was necessarily climate change related. I don't have all of the details on that incident. It was before I started, but I think that was also just a little bit of bad timing as well, and not knowing that there was a bear den there and then having done that activity so close to the den.
Is there any research into that, Sean, about our if bears are coming out sooner or anything that might be affected by climate change?
None that I know of. I mean, when a bear goes into the den in the fall, they've put on as much weight, as much adipose tissue as they can in order to provide for themselves through the hibernation period, because they're not eating at all. And if they had a poor fall, and so they're not up to full speed, if you will, in terms of body mass for body adipose stores, they'll come out more sooner, that's for sure. But otherwise, if you, especially in the springtime, for females or bears that are just coming out of the den, they don't come out of the den and run away. They hang around for a week or so to get acclimated. They've gone for several months without feeding, and they don't just start eating usually. They have, their body has to change, the metabolism has to readjust. And so we've had a lot of cases, several cases where people, both of the ones on J-Bear most recently, where they happened to stumble across a den where a bear had just come out a couple of days or a week beforehand, was still not quite up to speed for leaving. So that sounds like that could have happened on the skiers. I've got a lot of video of snowmobile tracks going over dens on the Kenai, where I know there's a collared bear there. But at the time of the year, it didn't bother them. And the one den I could see from my office is on a trail that's used quite a bit by skiers in the winter. And that bear at that point didn't attack anybody.
Thank goodness. We only have about a minute left here, and I wanted to get to a question about, some people say to me, and I'm not way out in the middle of nowhere, but I spend a lot of time on back trails around the city. It's my saving grace to get out in the woods and into the wilderness as much as I can. And I have friends that say, oh, I would never go out there. You're crazy to go out there. Something will attack you. For people who'd rather live in a place without so many wild animals, what's your pitch to them on why they should embrace living in this place with wildlife? Joe?
If they can run fast and they walk with somebody who runs a lot slower, then I encourage you.
Oh, gosh.
It's good for mental health.
Yeah.
That's a big reason for me, but physical health.
Yeah. Getting out there.
Seeing people who are out there, that's always nice. That's how I met Donna Gale. So.
Yeah. Go ahead, Donna Gale.
I love the outdoors. And as I get older, I tend to be less confident in my own skills, hearing, seeing, and being able to manage stressful situations like encountering a wolf pack or bears or whatever. So I always have the little talk with myself, what do I want out of life? And I want to enjoy my life. And part of that enjoyment is getting out into the wilderness that is so close to my home.
Yeah.
And I choose that, but I choose to do it safely.
Sean, a couple comments from you quickly.
Well, what they say, I'll echo the same thing. There's a reason for a lot of us that we live up here, and we like to get out and just do it as safely as you can and keep your wits about you.
Yeah, keep your wits about you and make
noise. And your dog in control and on a leash.
Yeah. All right, Hannah, I'm sorry we're going to have to wrap up, so we can't get final thoughts from you, but thanks so much for being with us. Thanks to our guests today, Sean Farley, Hannah Mannanen, Joe Cantill, and Donna Gale Shaw. Our on the board, Crystal Hyde was our engineer today. Our producer is Emily Messner. Our editor is Annie Feit. And on the phones, Ava White helped us out. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.